Radiotopia.
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season. Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from the Radiotopia universe. Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, is out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
I grew up in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, and the era was, hippies, bikers, Easy Rider, Janis Joplin was just free love. And the swinging 70s, man, it was a wild time. Looking for adventure in
whatever comes our way. With the Cultural Revolution in full swing, teenagers like Jane Cannelon were at risk of totally missing out. Luckily, her parents weren't exactly watching her every move.
I came from a huge Catholic family, 9 children. And I like to say I was raised by wolves because basically, unless I did something crazy like run away or OD on my mother's sleeping pills, which I did, I never really got much attention. I went to this biker bar called Val's on the wrong side of the track and met this group of bikers.
And Jane wrote about her easy riding days in her journal, as if she were a young Jack Kerouac.
December 20th, 1973, I'd better summarize the latest before this year comes to a close. If I haven't mentioned it, I got starved for romance, so I started seeing Bear. His Harley Davidson drove me wild in excitement and stimulation. He seemed extroverted and aggressive at first. I met all of his decadent friends, such as Scrounge, a real primate biker who has a true caveman voice and attitude. Woodrow, a biker who looks like he just jumped out of the woods. Skunk is a biker who has half black, half white hair and talks, acts, and sometimes even smells like a skunk. Bear picked me up from school wearing his deer skin vest and looking so bearish on his big red sparkled Harley. Only the freshman could be appalled. He didn't touch me until we were zooming home, did he suggest, "Let's have a little sex." All I could scream was, "It's about time!" If there was ever a time for a 16-year-old girl to jump on the back of a Harley Davidson, 1973 was the year because it was hot, it was groovy, it was dirty and sexy and fun. For me to break away like that was heaven.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. Today, tales about growing up in the 1970s, when the country was going through a paradigm shift, and suddenly, drugs were easy to come by, and love was apparently free. But none of that necessarily made finding a lasting relationship any easier, especially for teenagers like Lisa Deshawn, who wasn't so quick to embrace the times.
I think I was maybe the most religious person in my family. I think I was always kind of trying to straddle being the good girl and wanting to have a good time and be a party girl. But, you know, when it came to sex and just puberty and all that, I mean, I was a totally look but don't touch kind of girl.
So here is just a portion of the hundreds of pages that I wrote in 1976 and 1977 that I was sure would one day be published. This is my tribute to the bicentennial, a diary for 1976. 200 years ago, our country had become a United States. I live in Norman, Oklahoma. I am 13 years old. My father is a meteorologist. My mother is not a working supporter to our family.
Oh,
She's president of the Coalition for Equal Rights or something like that. I am a Lutheran of Lutheran religion. I'm 5'4" with blue eyes. I got my hair cut, rather, I should say, feathered. I wish I weren't so hairy. I have so many hairs on my arms. I have long eyelashes, which I like. I have a slight mustache, but mostly I have a hairy pube. The Life Cycle Library book said the first sign of maturing is breast development. For me, it was pubic hair. Can't say much for my bust, but I've overcome the depressing feelings of being flat by remembering I'm only 13. All around, I guess I'm pretty good looking. Oh, I started my period last summer, so maybe it won't be so long before I really start filling out. I have to clean my room. I've got pink shag carpet. It's feminine, but comfortable. Today's Valentine's Day. I wore a new outfit I got at Fashion Conspiracy. 30 guys were following the new girl around, trying to see her. You'd think she was Olivia Newton-John. Anna B. and Anna T. kept asking me how far I've gone, but I wouldn't tell them. First base is kissing. Second base is feeling off. Third base is fingering. And fourth base is going all the way, or fucking. Anna T. is the biggest slut at Whittier. She's so desperate for a dick. I want a boyfriend, and I've really got to get on the stick and start getting busy. I have fantasies that I'm a stacked woman who gets in hundreds of situations with sexy men. One night, I started playing with myself, feeling my breasts and rubbing the lips of my vagina. I kept doing it until, a half hour later, a sensation started coming and I could feel liquid being released. I was in another world of dreams and relaxation. From then on, I did it every night. But not on my periods. That is my most secret secret. I have a promise to myself that I'll stay a virgin until I'm married. My parents have a lot of sex. People are sex nuts, but there's so much more to life than being sex happy all the time. I'll never do it as a living, that's for sure. Amy's party was tonight. Kent and some guys got drunk. Can you imagine drunk in the eighth grade? It's going to affect them in sports. I asked why their hair is long and if pot ruins your sex life. So when I was 14, I started dating Justin. He was 16 and he was my first boyfriend with a car. Dana told me that Justin used to be real strong on pot. I asked him, and he said, no, I'm glad. We went to a party. Everyone was smoking out of a bong. It's to smoke pot out of. I think I got high on the smoke from everyone's reefers. Well, turned out he was always drunk or high or both, and this kind of went on for a while, and I was getting really upset about it, so I decided to write about it in my diary, seeking some advice. Dear God, I want to feel appreciated, and I don't, because I see Justin appreciating beer. We're going down a one-way street in opposite directions. I won't put up with being second to beer. So, I just had to break it off. Dear Justin, it's over. You want to be free, and I'll let you go. Like the song says, go your own way. Well, after that, I started seeing one of Justin's friends, Danny.
So the thing about Danny was he was just the cutest guy. I mean, he was sort of like big man on campus. Everyone liked him. He would say these things to me, that he loved me and that we were meant to be together, that God wanted us to be together. And so I just thought, this is it. This is the relationship that I've always wanted.
Danny's got the best body I've ever felt or been felt by. He talked right into my eyes. Lisa, I hardly even know you, but I feel like I've known you my whole life. So one night, Danny came over to my house. My parents were out of town. Yes, they left their 14-year-old daughter home alone with her two younger brothers. Danny and I talked about everything. He even talked about ethics. I don't even know what that is. He said, I feel so close to you, and ran his hands between my legs. He's such a great lover. He said, sometimes words are just not enough to express yourself. How true. Lisa, can you make love? Can you take it? How am I supposed to answer that? I told him I had a sore throat. I didn't really. It's like when the wife says, I've got a headache. I zipped up my jeans. We went to his car and he said, see you later. I wanted to kill myself. I had a vision of stabbing myself in my room with my diary and a note on top of it saying it would be left to Danny Singleton. If Danny is unable to receive this diary, I should like Dave Beck, my Sunday school teacher, to accept it. Dave is the backbone of my success. Amen.
Lisa DeShawn was able to stay true to her religious values. But what happens when you grow up in a town where the number one religion is surfing?
The beach was a couple miles from where I lived, and I could walk there. Everybody was tan and played volleyball. It was just a lot of surfers, you know? We would be wearing our bikinis for sure, and then just walk up and down the strand looking for guys, getting into conversations.
Growing up in a totally chill beach culture, while riding the second wave of feminism, left Donna Otter with the sense that hooking up wasn't shameful or quote-unquote slutty, but actually
kind of sweet and innocent in a way. But it was just like, oh, we can do this. I didn't know that. Great. And virginity wasn't something to hang on to. It was something to get rid of. I really think it was about the pill. You know, the pill came out, and then suddenly life could be different.
So I started ninth grade, you know, flat, pimples, frizzy hair, glasses, no friends. But in my homeroom class, there was this smart, funny girl, Betsy, who took me under her wing and became my bestie. We had many adventures. My poor parents had come of age in the Happy Days 50s and were in no way prepared for the free love 70s. So this begins with a new journal from 1973. I was 17. I'm really ashamed of all the crap I've written in the old one in 2 years. I mean, every page is filled with guys. You would think there was nothing else in my life. I mean, believe it or not, I have a family. Yes, there is a mother, a father, two brothers, and there are actually world affairs going on around me. The world is wrapped up in an energy crisis right now. We just got over a big Watergate scandal. Wait, I know why I don't fill these pages with news. It's boring. Betsy's gonna come over now. I like her so much. We're really good buddies. Dear Journal, Betsy and I took a little sailboat down to King Harbor. We were coming in when we passed one going out. They waved and asked if we wanted to go out for a sail. We got on the boat, and one guy, Phil, was a total geek, and the other one, Kim, After a while, I said I had to get back, so they turned around. We docked, and we're just sitting there talking when all of a sudden my dad was there. He started yelling, "Do you know how fucking old these girls are?" "Do you know what fucking time it is? You should have your fucking head examined." Kim said, "Fine, can you recommend anyone?" Dad grabbed us and started shoving us up the ramp. I was so humiliated. I felt like I was in about third grade. I've never seen my dad that mad. But today, Kim called me. We talked for a while, then went to his boat and made love. It was so good. It was the best I've ever had. He's 27 and he's married. It doesn't make any difference, though. Isn't that weird? Hey, you know who I really like to call? Gary. I'd like to talk to that critter again. Do you know how long it's been since I've had sex? 6 days. Dear Journal, these past few days, I've been so totally bummed out. I can't believe Betsy's little friend, Jim. He's exactly what she needs right now. Unfortunately, he's just what I need, too. not that I'm after him. I'm just jealous. I'm trying so hard to be a good friend. I always tell her what a fox he is and how stoked I am for her.
Betsy and I would go out together and pick up guys, and this was just something we did. So one night we went out and met these two guys, and one of them was Jim. And then they ended up seeing each other all the time. So suddenly, Betsy was in a relationship. And it was very physical, and every time I was with her, they were climbing all over each other and laughing and then running off to the bedroom. And so I really missed her because she was my everything that I did everything with.
Dear Journal, I'm so lonely right now. I just cried, real tears even. I wish so much I could be with someone right now. The only person I want to be with is Jan, or maybe Scott. Am I an insecure person? I never thought I was, but shit, I need to be in love. I bought a Led Zeppelin album. But that made me feel too rowdy. Dear Journal, it's been 3 months now for Betsy and Jim, and I hate to say this, but I think it's gone to her head. The thing is, She doesn't talk about him that much, but the things she does say make me croak. It is hard for me to be around her all the time, or any of the time. Dear journal, my keep on truckin' poster just fell down. That's very symbolic of my life at this stage. Dear journal, I'll let you in on a little secret. Last year on my birthday, I got a dildo for a joke. I had to resort to it after school. It made me feel worse. Oh, Lord, I got the horny blues. Dear journal, I'm going to devote a lot of space here to my parents, and it's going to be hard because I never write about them. We've always been pretty open and honest, so it's been pretty hectic for me since I've gotten into sex because I feel like I'm living in a lie with them. Once my dad said he wouldn't mind me having sex, but he wouldn't want me to be promiscuous. It all started when Dad informed me that Mom had found my birth control pills. He said he thought that I owed Mom an explanation and an apology. I was so shocked and freaked out that I just ran into my room and cried. It was tearing me apart, and Mom too. I came home from work 3 nights later and found that Mom and Dad had discovered a bunch of pot in Dan's, my brother's, room. He had carved out books to hide it in and even hacked a hole out of a globe for another storage compartment. Dad was off talking to Dan, and I was with Mom when she launched into her, "I wasn't meant to be a mother." And I just started crying really hard. I couldn't stop, and Mom put her arms around me. She said she'd never believe that it was normal, casual sex, and she'd have to accept it, but she could never agree with it.
My mom finding my birth control pills was a big surprise. We did have a lot of talks. She didn't have sex before she got married. So the fact that I was just going out and sleeping around would be horrifying. It was empowering. It was fun. It was exciting. It was also, there was definitely a downside to it for sure. I mean, I didn't really know how to get next to people and how to get to know somebody and how to figure out what I wanted and did I really want this? I would just fling myself in all the way.
So since I was constantly moping about and punishing Betsy for abandoning me, she and Jim systematically fixed me up with all of his surfer stoner friends one at a time, but nothing stuck. There was one guy though who actually became my first boyfriend who they never considered because he was too weird. Dear journal, about a week ago, I was over at Betsy's, and Dave, who's Jim's brother, came by. When Betsy and Jim went into the bedroom, Dave and I had a really good time getting high. After a while, we went to Dave's house and ended up going to bed. Usually, I feel like I know what I'm doing, but shit, he's really been around. I talked to him Friday, and then at 2 a.m, he called and wanted me to come over. Why not? I didn't put my contacts in or brush my hair or anything, and when I wandered out onto the street, there he was, sitting naked in his white Mustang.
Being with Dave was the first relationship I had with a guy where it was more than hooking up, where there were actual conversations and something was sustained there, and there, it was ongoing, and it was exclusive. That relationship was the start of having healthier relationships, but I wouldn't say it was that simple because it still took me many, many years to be able to settle down with somebody and really get close to them and let them get close to me. which is kind of, it's just, that's the funny thing about that time, because it was so easy to be with people in a sexual way, and yet I hadn't developed the skills of knowing how to be with somebody in another way.
So I think this is a good time to officially forgive Betsy for for abandoning me and spending all that time with that foxy surfer dude, because she actually did marry him. And 40 years later, they're still married. And now we enjoy exchanging pictures of our grandbabies. Thank you.
This concludes today's episode, where we learned that no matter how a teenage girl in the 70s felt about free love, they all agreed on one thing. There's nothing quite as hot as a hunk with a set of killer wheels. To share the shame, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or visit getmortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of this series. And even if you have no ambition to share your old writings with the world, we encourage everyone out there to find something you created as a kid, anything, even stuff that says,
I won't put up with being second to beer.
And share it with just one friend. It's fun, it's scary, and we promise you'll discover something new about yourself in the conversation that follows. As many of you know, the Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation. Thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia. And if your company would like to support our podcasts, we'd love that. Email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Katie McMurrin, Hadley Dion, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Ketcher. Featured readers include Donna Otter, Lisa Deshawn, and Jane Cantillon. Stories were produced for the stage by Susan Danahy and Jessica Stuckey-Leith. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake, Snake, Snakes. Big thanks to Esther Glovaki.
You're welcome.
And Lance Roberts Studios. And all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and somehow we all managed to survive this song.